This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, January 7th, 2021. I'm Caleb Brown. The attack on the Capitol yesterday left four people dead and a president not exactly striking a remorseful or even conciliatory tone for his role in urging his supporters to confront lawmakers as they counted the votes of the Electoral College. Lawmakers are again raising the possibility of removing the president either through impeachment or invoking the 25th Amendment. Cato's Gene Healy discusses these two possible resolutions to the waning Trump presidency and details how they would work.
Since the rioting, the insurrection at the Capitol yesterday, there have been renewed calls, including from the National Association of Manufacturers, which is a massive interest group that normally wouldn't weigh in on topics like this, calling for either impeachment or the making use of the 25th Amendment to remove Donald Trump from office. You've written about this, and I remember, I guess it was maybe a couple of years ago, suggesting that at the time, at least, the 25th Amendment solution, as we called it, was generally unserious. So, are either of these a good idea with just a fortnight's worth of time left on the Trump presidency?
Yeah, we've had a strange week. We started off the week with one impeachment debate. There were more calls for impeachment and removal after the president's, the leaked audio of the president's phone call leaning on Georgia election officials about finding him some 11,000 votes. And it seemed at the beginning of the week that we were going to have a very familiar debate, sort of a warmed over version of what we did last year. Read the transcript. Was it another perfect call or a shakedown attempt? You know, time is a flat circle, it seemed like, with Trump. Then everything changed by Wednesday afternoon, and we're having a very different and a much more serious debate about the constitutional means for removing a president. It's funny, when we were having the earlier impeachment and 25th Amendment debates earlier on in this administration, I kept hearing from people that, you know, impeachment, it's like a coup. It's incredibly disruptive. It's anti-democratic. And I just have to say, I hope after the events of this week, I never hear that kind of stuff again.
So on impeachment or the 25th Amendment, again, just 2 weeks left in this president's term.
Right, but there's nothing in the Constitution, despite what the president's lawyers argued the last time around, there's nothing in the Constitution that requires an elaborate process with a raft of hearings. You know, all the Constitution says about it is the House has the sole power of impeachments. The Senate has the sole power to try impeachments. They can adopt whatever process they want. This is not something that they're going to be slapped back by the Supreme Court for. And, it's certainly true that the timeline is tight, but it's conceivable, at least, that if they wanted to, they could put together a fast track impeachment process. And it seems to me that what we're talking about here, it's semi new territory. Is incitement to riot an impeachable offense? But high crimes and misdemeanors, despite what a lot of people seem to think about it, is a very broad remedy. It's addressed at serious misconduct that demonstrates unfitness for high office. Hamilton described it as abusive violation or violation of some public trust. Madison talked about impeachment as an indispensable remedy for the president's incapacity, negligence, or perfidy. So this is a very expansive tool in the congressional arsenal, and it's been used in very broad ways before. The first federal official, this might be a useful precedent, the first federal official ever to be removed from office as a result of the impeachment process, Judge John Pickering in 1804, was impeached and removed essentially for showing up to work drunk and ranting like a maniac from the bench. On the presidential level, Article 10 of Andrew Johnson's impeachment was for a series of speeches he made using, quote, scandalous and intemperate harangues. And, you know, these were speeches that departed from the norms of presidential rhetoric at the time. And whatever you want to say about them, they didn't incite a riot. And we are not talking again about a criminal process here. The penalties for impeachment are limited to removal from office or disqualification for certain future offices. And you don't have to go through the sort of meeting every element of a federal criminal statute and passing the Supreme Court's Brandenburg incitement test in order to do this. It's a flexible remedy that's aimed at all sorts of misconduct. And the misconduct in this case, I think we have to say, is appalling.
Yeah, I remember when we had talked about this previously, it seems as if impeachment as a process is meant to deal with conduct unbecoming the president.
Yes. I mean, certainly it's not supposed to be used lightly. You wouldn't impeach Donald Trump because he ties his tie too long or eats well-done steak with ketchup. But for broad departures of from the norms of presidential conduct, for contempt for the rule of law, for what he did on Wednesday, giving aid and comfort to an angry mob, arguably inciting them to storm the Capitol. No, this is not a difficult question in terms of our impeachment precedents.
So there is the another remedy, in a sense, that does not involve removing the president from office. The Senate could disqualify the president from becoming president again. How is that supposed to work?
Well, that's one of the reasons, you know, when people are saying, well, look, we've got less than 2 weeks left. What's the point of, even if you could get this done, what is the point of, you know, removing him with 2 days left in, you know, by the time you get it done, removing it with 2 days left in his term? And one rejoinder to that is that the Constitution provides for another penalty besides removal from office. So Article 1, Section 3 gives you the option of a, quote, disqualification to hold and enjoy any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States. Well, this particular punishment has only been imposed three times in our constitutional history, each time against a federal judge. And the Senate practice holds that it only takes a majority vote to impose it. So you have a two-thirds requirement for conviction and removal. And if you want to, you can attach this additional penalty that's supposed to prevent the impeachment target from holding certain offices. So the question is, could you use this to make sure to close the door on the possibility that Donald Trump will ever have a second shot at the presidency in 2024 or another election cycle. But we're in pretty uncharted territory here. I mean, Donald Trump may not know how many articles there are in the Constitution, but he's sort of been a full employment program for constitutional law professors by giving rise to things that were, you know, wild law school hypotheticals or exam questions. And one of those is the presidency the sort of office that the constitutional language, Office of Honor, Trust, and Profit, talks about, such that you could disqualify someone from being elected after you impeach them and remove them. Could you also disqualify them from taking the office again? Well, there's a legal scholar, Seth Barrett Tillman, who's done a lot of work on this, and he's made an interesting argument that might even be correct, that when the Constitution uses the phrase office under the United States, as it does in the disqualification provision, that it's a term of art. It's something like the term office under the crown in British law. And it's a term of art that covers appointed officials, not elected ones. So under his reading, the Senate could bar Donald Trump from serving as a federal judge or secretary of state in a future administration, but not a second shot at the presidency. It's an interesting question. I think it is largely academic in both senses. You only get to the disqualification vote if you have enough Senate votes to remove. Imagine we're in a world, I don't know if we're in the world, in this world, but imagine that Wednesday was Donald Trump's shooting someone on Fifth Avenue moment, where maybe he's done something so badly that Republicans are willing to cross the aisle and vote to convict him in an impeachment trial. I mean, if you actually got to that point where you had more than 17 Republicans, the 17 Republicans it would take to convict him in a Senate trial, it seems unlikely that he's going to bounce back so hard. If he's become that toxic, it seems unlikely that he's going to bounce back so hard that this disqualification question, the question of the meaning of this language, becomes important enough that we have to have Supreme Court oral argument on it or something. It would seem that if we reach that point, he's probably not going to be president in 2024, 25 anyway.
This 25th Amendment solution, which not that long ago seemed a little bit beyond the pale, now seems very realistic. Mike Pence appeared to have a very public break with the president by displaying his reading comprehension and asserting that he, in fact, does not have the authority to do anything but count the votes that were sent by state legislatures.
Yeah, actually removing him from office through Section 4 of the 25th Amendment might be a bridge further than that. But it's certainly true that we seem to be closer to that scenario, however close we are, than we've been during the entire Trump's entire term. The second way to get rid of a president who doesn't want to go before his term is up is this provision, Section 4 of the 25th Amendment. And it requires the vice president and the majority of the principal officers of the executive departments, the cabinet heads, to get together, reach that majority, and notify Congress that the president is, quote, unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. When that happens, the vice president becomes acting president, and the president can challenge that, send a letter, say, nope, I'm good. I want the job back. And Congress gets essentially about 3 weeks to decide who's right and whether to ratify the switch. All along, I have thought this was an unrealistic solution. For one thing, as a practical matter, in order for Congress to ratify this switch, you need 2/3 of each house of Congress, as opposed to just a majority of the House and a supermajority in the Senate for impeachment and removal. If you don't have that double supermajority, all it does is put the president in a temporary timeout. The drafters of the 25th deliberately made it harder than impeachment, in part because it wasn't supposed to be an eject button for bad presidents. It was supposed to be used for incapacitated or nearly completely incapacitated presidents, Woodrow Wilson in the stroke, James Garfield dying of blood poisoning after being shot, that sort of thing. And the language there, you know, unable to discharge the powers and duties of the office reflects that. Now, people right now aren't worried that Trump's literally unable to discharge the powers and duties of the office. They're worried that he is such bad judgment and such abysmal character that he's going to do something really destructive with the powers he has in the time he has left to him. And this, for the first time, is where the 25th Amendment, practically speaking, has some advantages over the impeachment process, because even a stripped down fast-track impeachment process like you would have to run if you were going to try to impeach and remove the president with this much time left in the calendar, even that sort of stripped down process takes a while. You know, it's going to take a few days at least. And there are a lot of roadblocks that could be thrown up by people in each house who resist it. By contrast, the 25th Amendment is rapid fire. If Pence had enough of the cabinet behind him, he could do it in the next 10 minutes. And it would be effective as soon as that notification was transmitted to Congress. Furthermore, you're not in the situation you've been earlier in the presidency when people have been bringing this up, which basically, if you triggered this, you would put the president in the timeout corner for a couple of weeks, and then he comes back madder than ever and hell-bent for vengeance. The clock will run out if Mike Pence and the cabinet invoke this thing anytime in between now and January 20th. And so the only scenario I ever saw it having this advantage was, previous to this was, let's say the president orders an unprovoked nuclear first strike. The vice president gets wind of it, the joint chiefs tell him, and instead of transmitting that order through command and control systems in a rapid manner, they tell the cabinet what's going on and decide to put the president in immediate timeout. You know, I hope we're not at that kind of situation here, but the argument for this sort of move would be, how much of a chance do you want to take? In one sense, we've gotten kind of lucky so far. This is a president who's talked about unleashing thermonuclear fire and fury, who's tweeted in this weird Freudian bout with Kim Jong-un about whose nuclear button was bigger and more powerful. How much are you? Maybe we've been lucky so far, and Nixon went kind of crazy in his final days. Maybe we haven't hit peak Trump yet with less than 2 weeks left in his term. And so that would be the argument. And I have to say, I think it's a pretty compelling argument.
Gene Healy is a vice president at the Cato Institute. Subscribe to the Cato Daily Podcast anywhere you please and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.